You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Jim Heiniger.
Rebranding itself signals change, and it has to be a substantive change. It's going to the core of your purpose and who you are and your promise to customers, and pivoting that to create a more forward-facing organization and creating a foundation for growth in the future.
Jim is a growth communicator, change activist, and rebranding evangelist. He has spent 30 years in the marketing communication industry, building and protecting some of the world's best-known brands, including McDonald's, Anheuser-Busch, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Wendy's, and Molson Coors. Based in Chicago, he leads two agencies, Dixon James Communications, a communications and change management firm, and Rebranding Experts, a team which focuses solely on the rebranding of companies and organizations. A firm believer that rebranding is an enterprise-wide strategic growth accelerator, he regularly shares first-hand insights on when to consider a rebranding strategy and how and when to rebrand successfully. Jim, welcome to On Brand.
Great to be with you, Nick.
I am so excited about this conversation because we have talked about so many different aspects of branding through the years, but I am not sure that we have talked with someone that is a capital R, capital E, in the name of your business, a rebranding expert. So I am excited for this focus.
Good deal.
So
let's get to it.
Yeah. So what led you down to, because again, you lead two agencies. You have your communication change management firm, but then I would have to imagine that you saw a need specific to rebranding, which most in the business of branding encounter rebranding in some form many times, potentially in their work. But what was the trigger that said that in and of itself is a major focus?
We had several opportunities within Dixon James, once I founded that business, to take on rebranding assignments. And it's very clear that to do rebranding correctly, it is a much more comprehensive, all-encompassing effort within an organization than just a marketing strategy. And it requires, you know, obviously the strategy and the creative and so forth, but it really involves engaging and aligning the entire employee base behind the rebranding effort, and a lot of change management, because you're needing to redefine the customer experience, the employee experience, the way the organization goes to market and presents itself. And so recognize that we needed a separate agency that brought all those capabilities together under one roof that could better serve clients and really help them and achieve this kind of transformative process.
So I think that that's fascinating, and I love the intersection of the work that you do around change management, because I think rebranding, especially when you look at big organizations, complex organizations with long-standing brands that people are very attached to, especially internally, that is a lot of change to work through with your people internally.
Yes, rebranding itself signals change, and it has to be a substantive change. It's going to the core of your purpose and who you are and your promise to customers, and pivoting that to create a more forward-facing organization and creating a foundation for growth in the future. And so it's very important that your internal audiences are the ones that believe in that, support that, and deliver that consistently to customers. We actually did some research about 5 years ago, and the number one obstacle to a successful rebranding expert, this is among companies that had rebranded, was internal alignment. And that was everything from leadership and executive support of the rebranding to employees understanding and supporting the rebranding effort in their day-to-day work.
So that sounds like something that many of us have heard in terms of employee alignment, and yet that is not an item that is easily checked off the list. So what do you do about a gap in employee alignment when it comes to rebranding?
Well, we often say that, you know, rebranding goes from the top to the bottom and the inside to the out, so that leadership needs to carry the flag and embody the new rebranded organization and set that example for all the employees internally. And then you need to make sure that you are able to deliver on that rebranded experience before you go out and tell the marketplace that you're doing it. So thus you can see, you know, the really kind of transformative process and the need for change management to make sure that you've gone through the necessary steps to really engage that employee's understanding why they're doing this, what is the problem that the organization is trying to solve by rebranding, and then understanding how it impacts their day-to-day work. How do they live that new brand? What are the behaviors that they need to do differently that represent that brand?
So you talk about the need for change management, and I feel like that could create a disparity in the pace that some organizations think that they're going to be able to move at with wanting to do big, bold things with a rebrand, discovering they have an alignment challenge. Does that slow the process down for organizations?
It doesn't. Well, it may impact expectations in terms of how quickly you right. can achieve it. But you know, clearly the you know, you need to plan on probably about 18 months for a major organization for a very comprehensive rebranding. And then you have to anticipate another 12, 18 months after the yeah. announcement and the activation of the new brand for it to really sink in with your customers, with your key stakeholders. And if it's a name change, especially for them to begin to adopt and use that new name consistently. So yes, I think it's you do need to plan a long runway, and you need to manage your expectations against that. It's not a instant makeover. It's not a quick a quick fix where you can, you know, the joke we always say in the rebranding industry that you have to put lipstick on the pig. No, it's not that simple. It's a much more long term investment of time and resources and effort, but the opportunity is huge. And it's really the opportunity to grasp the future and make it much more kind of forward facing and put in place a whole new platform or foundation for growth, which is really the number one reason that an organization should rebrand is to capture more growth.
You know, it never occurred to me the intersection of rebranding and the false expectations created by reality TV quick makeover shows, because I think sometimes that's sort of what we expect. And I like how in plotting out that long runway, because I was going to say slice and dice up that time a bit, because I bet there's some folks that think that the launch happens in the middle of that and then that's the whole Megillah. And I was glad that you added on that, and then there's probably another 12 months beyond that. Beyond the announcement after it's out there. And it's just, it's a lot of time at various important stages that you don't want to short the runway at all. That sounds dangerous.
Exactly. Yeah, short the time frame, short the investment that it's going to require to do it right.
And in terms of getting folks on board, and when you've got You've got frontline people in some cases that are delivering that very brand experience. What form does some of that employee alignment and education take?
It's a good question, and there's some interesting kind of trends and development in that within the rebranding world. So first of all, our belief, our assumption has always been that there needs to be a lot of work done upfront and within a fairly contained but cross-functional team that that looks at what is the essence of the our current brand, what are we going to transfer, what equities are we going to move forward to the new brand, and what is that definition of that new brand that really kind of articulates our future and where we're going. Some of that work needs to be done, you know, around the table with a smaller group of people, and then to start to engage internal stakeholders a little bit more, employees, leaders, folks representative of various departments throughout the organization to kind of bounce off of them and gain their input and their feedback in tightening that and bringing it to a fairly final kind of presentation that would then be used to engage the larger employee base. There's always a tricky line that you don't want to announce your rebranding before you're ready to deliver against it. So you have to have a fairly condensed time period with which you inform your internal employees of what the new brand is, how they're going to live it every day, what's the language we're going to use, what's the behaviors we're going to use, and give them time to, you know, to embrace those and be ready to deliver those before you announce it externally. One of the trends that's happening that's interesting is folks, organizations making the kind of finalization of the new brand more public and asking for feedback on it as they kind of are trying to make their final decisions. And there's some risk involved in that, because if you go forth and you say, you know, what do you think of this? And your intent all along is that's what the new brand is going to be, and that's the new look and feel of it and so forth. You're somewhat kind of teasing people a little bit and not necessarily asking for their feedback, but kind of asking for early adoption of it. So an interesting example of this, Coldwell Banker last year, the realty firm, did what they called a transparent rebranding, and once they got to the kind of final set of what they were wanting to do, they went forward with it within their broker community and so forth, and asked for feedback on it. Hasn't really changed much, so one would believe that that was the intent going forward, but that they use that as a strategy to kind of make people feel as if they were they had input into this and therefore were more invested in it, even though it was pretty predetermined. The other thing we've seen is more crowdsourcing of input within rebrandings. Again, a little risky, because you want the experts, so to speak, on the table really kind of defining that and then testing that before you actually ask your customers and your employees to tell you what you should be rebranding to. But it's kind of one of the trends that we've been watching and trying to see how successful that is, if it's really intentional in making a better brand, or if it's really kind of a playing along this sense of transparency in what you're doing as a way of getting people to invest in the new brand.
Hey, On Brand listeners. Nick Westergaard here. This is usually the point in the show where I mention that I'd love to speak at your next conference or corporate event. However, given current circumstances, most live events are being postponed or they're moving to virtual events. All of my keynotes are available virtually as webinars, including new talks on marketing in times of crisis and on virtual communication itself. As a listener of the On Brand podcast, you know I can keep an online audience engaged. I've also conducted countless global webinars and online education programs. Learn more now at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard with two A's .com/speaking. Now back to the show.
So that's fascinating to think about these new trends like crowdsourcing and revealing some of this to the public. But I want to look at, we've talked about a few different examples, but I want to talk about who you think of. You and I sit on a board together at the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Iowa, and I was going to ask for the textbook example, which feels very, very, very academic of me. But the textbook example of what you point to as a solid rebrand and a textbook example of one that maybe was a bit of a struggle or didn't go as those that rebranded it planned it.
Mm-hmm. Good question. So that I think the one that will continually be cited as a good example of rebranding is years ago Arthur Andersen rebranding as Accenture. It was an example of a time where the name and the baggage that was associated with Arthur Andersen needed to be left behind, and they needed to move forward with an exciting new kind of presentation of their capabilities for the future. I think a good example of one that recently has been a little bumpier and has not gone quite as well as anticipated was Weight Watchers move to WW, which was an abbreviation of, you know, yeah, of their name. I'm not a big fan of acronyms because they don't have a lot of meaning to them, but they wanted to reposition themselves as more of a wellness company as opposed to a diet plan, and which is a great long-term, you know, forward-facing future ambition and ways to open up the business and create new opportunities for growth and so forth. I think that the challenge that they face, because they got a lot of backlash at first as to WW. First of all, it's a little difficult to pronounce. It's a little different, you know, awkward to look at. They should have tried to build it more as a nickname for the organization and then embraced it as the brand of the organization. But jumping all the way in a very short period of time to WW was a little, it was clunky and a little awkward for folks. And so they spent a lot of time trying to reinforce their decision, trying to justify it, trying to get people to understand, you know, the leap that they were asking people to make. So those are a couple good textbook examples.
So are great examples. It's interesting. They both relate to the name in different ways, and it occurs to me that we sometimes talk about rebranding as a pretty generic process, but it can involve a lot of, you can rebrand a lot of different ways. You can take everything, the name, the visuals, you change everything. You can keep the name and add a new brand promise, a new focus to it, and a lot of things in between. Are there other options? And when do you know how much to redo?
So you're correct that rebranding as a term is probably overused, because it's meant, and it's used by different organizations and by the media and so forth to represent any kind of identity change. We break it down from there, and we really look at, you know, you have the opportunity to refresh your brand, which is really more the outward appearance of your brand, your logo, your design set that you're going to be using, perhaps a tagline to modernize it, to make it look fresher, you know. But really the organization, the promise to customers underneath is not changing. It's just getting a makeover. Then you can, the second step would be to reposition your brand. And that would be to open up opportunities for new products that are relevant to new audiences. And I think the best example of that is what Old Spice did in terms of really making itself more relevant to younger men, you know, several years right. ago with, you know, new scents and new products and new marketing and so forth. It was still Old Spice, And they didn't change that, but they made it more relevant by repositioning the brand to a new generation of potential users. A rebrand is really going back to the core of who you are. So, you know, if a brand is the heart and the soul of your organization, it's your purpose, it's your reason for being, and you are rebranding, which is to means to kind of make a new, you know, to do it again, to do over, then it means really shifting the foundation of the house, so to speak, you know, to make it relevant and to the future, and to be able to grasp new future opportunities. And that can be done for a variety of reasons. It can be done for proactive reasons or reactive. You could be responding to the marketplace where competitors are just, you know, are moving quickly and you're not moving fast enough. It could be a crisis, perhaps. Or if you do it proactively, it could be that your business model, your essence of who you are just really isn't relevant anymore, and you're needing to update it. It could be that there's a leadership change or ownership change of an organization, and you're needing to reposition, you know, rebrand yourself now to be something different than what you were in the past. So we always look at what people are announcing as a rebranding is it really just a refresh of the look and feel of it? Is it a repositioning to capture new markets? Or is it a rebrand, which is to changing the overall purpose of the organization?
I love those distinctions. And in walking through those, it occurs to me, unless I'm mistaken, I think there's a whole lot of what's going on that is often called a rebrand that is really just a refresh of.
Correct.
And yeah. The reposition is fascinating, especially Old Spice, because it's a very different strategic driver there, because that is new audience development. That is taking this brand that has meant this for these people for this amount of time, and it's now something else, something somewhat similar to a new demographic. That's a great
kind of recreating that within a new demographic. Yeah.
And it's interesting, because I would imagine there are folks, I sometimes refer to businesses like ours, like a doctor with patients that present as XYZ. And I wonder if there are patients, organizations that present thinking they need one thing and really needing something else. Are we always right in self-assessing what our brand needs, what kind of moves we need to make?
The first question you need to ask yourself is, what problem are we trying to solve? Yeah. And that would determine, you know, do you refresh, do you reposition, or do you rebrand?
Yeah, and it seems like sometimes that's probably, sometimes it can be very simple, because I think having an outside party asking you that can make you stop and think, because you might have a whole lot stirred up in people's heads internally, and a mixture of some different things, of someone that just has never liked the logo and needs something bigger to push through doing something different, someone that doesn't like or that has a new market in mind, or something that, yeah, is just a lot of mixed up things. But that's you can't build a strategy around that.
It reminds me of a recent example of working with a client that was rebranding its product lines and actually taking on a brand of a parent organization and pulling it down into their product lines and services. The organization itself was struggling for growth. It was not moving, keeping up, and needed a major boost. And that's, you're right, that's hard to tell internal audiences to say we're not doing as good as we could, but that's what leadership's all about. And that, you know, that's the transparency that's needed in leadership to not ignore acknowledging that, but to say we've achieved a lot, we've done good, but that's not going to get us into the future. And that's not going to continue to create growth opportunities for you all, for opportunities to learn new things, to expand, to, you know, embrace new, you know, new technology platforms and digital innovation and so forth. We need to do something differently. And that, you're right, that is very hard to use that level of honesty with internal audiences, and to do it in a way that doesn't offend anybody or to make them feel that that what they've done to that point in time was not contributing to success.
Well, and that's kind of the unifying element between all of this. You talk about what problem are you trying to solve. You talk about the differences in a refresh, reposition, rebrand, and ultimately the role your brand plays and what someone like a leader should be looking at. And makes me think of your earlier phrase about top, bottom, every which way. Mm-hmm. And ultimately what the leader's eye should be on is, are we a brand that people want to connect with, that they right. want to be a part of? And there could be all sorts of different challenges, problems, like you said, that could get in the way of that over time. And knowing which one and how to attack it is a lot of work.
Yeah, the kind of fundamental truth is that, you know, average consumers aren't out to emotionally connect with companies. That's not a priority of, you know, our day-to-day activities. So it's the brand's responsibility to find the emotional connection with them. And, you know, people are looking for how do I make my life better, easier, you know, give me more of what I want. And it's very important that you don't assume that the customer is necessarily wrapping their arms around your brand. You have to give them a reason to.
Yeah. Well, these are great points, and many of them have made me smile. But as we hit our window of time here, it is important, Jim, for me to ask you, what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
So, a very interesting question in this time of the pandemic and the shutdown and so forth, shelter in place and so forth. And the brands that have made me smile are individual brands. So the brands like Oprah Winfrey and Brené Brown, who are, you know, are true kind of experts in the human condition. And how do we manage and view our lives and the environment around us and so forth? And their thoughts of what they have been sharing have made me smile recently, because they're very much working from the core of who they are, but making their brand relevant to today's environment. And I think, you know, they've done graduation speeches that, even though I'm not graduating, it's been many years, I'm inspired by it, because they're giving you a view of the human condition in today's environment. So those are personality brands, but I think they're the ones that are really shining through in this moment right now.
I think that those are great, inspiring examples. Jim, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
So the Rebranding Experts, our website is just that, rebrandingexperts.com, and certainly follow us on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn as well, too.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Jim, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thanks, Nick.
And a reminder, if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.